August 12, 2020. It's a lot from Pedro Show. We'll be right back. Watch for Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Brother Matt, at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point. Still in quarantino mode here, but I am not totally man alone. Because due to those software cats in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got Tyler Nolan with me from Highland Park here in Cali. Welcome aboard, Tyler.
Thanks for having me. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. I should tell people what we heard, huh? of course, John Coltrane. You know, I start every show with John Coltrane. Back in May, it was 19 years. And every Watt for Pedro show. In fact, last show with Crane, back on Saturday, was the 700th show. And they're all archived at TWFPS.com. But I always start with John Coltrane. And what we did here was when it was with Thelonious Monk. Very important 9 months for him in between shifts with Miles Davis, because this is when he quits the shit, right? Just holes up in his pad on 33rd Street up in Philly and cold turkey. No more fucking junk. He wrote a little piece about it later called Love Supreme. So for thank you. This was called Epistrophe, and it was a short version. Then we had a catch Tyler plays with Vaz with Chartreuse Blues. Tyler, please, what's your earliest musical recollection? Fuck, you're all loud now. I know it. It happens every fucking time.
You know, I guess my earliest musical recollection, music was certainly a huge part of my household growing up. My mom was very into music. I remember the first show that I went to was actually
I'm talking about before that. Like, what's the earliest like memory of music in your brain?
I guess it was probably a lot of traditional Irish music that was playing constantly in my household.
Like records or in real time?
No, records. Okay. You know, like the Chieftains and stuff beyond that, you know, that from an early age was something that, you know, was that will always stick with me. I guess as far as like getting into popular music and stuff, it was more of like a lot of Led Zeppelin, actually.
So there's ethnic Irish music and Led Zeppelin. Where was this?
I grew up in a town called Chico in Northern California.
Oh, I know where it is. College town. In fact, yeah, California town, 99, well, in the old days, it was probably a farm town because my pop grew up in a town not far from there called Red Bluff.
Oh, yeah. I know Red Bluff well. We would play them. I was on the basketball team, and we would, you know, they were a rival of ours.
Now, both these towns are like Sacramento River towns.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Red Bluff, I think, came from like the mule. I mean, people, first time I saw a big fucking ship going up the Sacto River, man, like you're in the middle of, right? Sacramento.
Yeah, well, it's like that whole, it's like the North Valley, essentially. It's, you know, Red Bluff and Chico and Redding and Oroville, Paradise, which is obviously was decimated by the fire.
Yeah,
you know, that was basically our you know, that's the whole area. That was our conference, if you will.
Okay, there's a song that Creedence Clearwater Revival did called Lodi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lodi, yeah. Right? Yeah, definitely.
Now, it should be pronounced Lodi if you lived in Italy, and there was a famous Napoleonic battle there, but we know it for the song, and the song is about, like, every dude in the band knows about kind of a bummer, right?
Yeah.
but easy chord.
I mean, I think there's... go ahead.
The pad you grew up in, Tyler, was there instruments?
There weren't instruments. My mom was very much into music. I got introduced to playing music. My uncle was a musician, and he got me into playing guitar. He bought me my first guitar, and that was probably when I was, maybe 15.
Now, did you ask for it?
I did. Visiting him, he would always have, you know, he had instruments. I would spend most of my summers at his house, and he had instruments everywhere. And so I, you know, would pick up his guitars and then just took to it and asked him, he asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I said a guitar, and that was it.
Was this Chico too?
No, he lived in, at the time, Livermore, California, okay. In the East Bay.
Yeah, people on your way to the city or to the East Bay first. Actually, it's kind of a famous place for a couple reasons, because the Livermore factories is where all the plutonium buttons for the nuclear warheads are made.
Right, the Livermore Labs. Yeah,
but also, there's a place on the road going through called Ultimate Pass, and there's a famous Rolling Stone gig that was a disaster there. And so
that's right.
And the weather's a little bit different, because what I wanted to tell people was, if you're in the Sacto Valley in the summertime, it's sweaty, man.
It is brutally hot. It is, I mean, it would, you know, for it to be weeks on end in the hundreds, was not uncommon.
And then it's kind of cold in the winter. It's for California, for California.
It does. The winters are very rainy. And it stays fairly cold. You know, I think we get a snow, and we're in the valley. We're not really, we're like kind of nestled. Chico's nestled in the foothills of the Sierras, but, for the most part, the city's in the valley, and, you know, we would get snow once every 4 or 5 years, maybe.
You know who lived there for a little while was Brother Steve McKay, the sax man for the Stooges. Also, I think Michael Davis from the bass on the MC5.
They lived in Chico?
For little bits.
Oh, wow.
During their lives. That's... You know, those, they're Michigan guys, you know, but.
Yeah,
I think Michael Davis might even ended up there. Anyway, you said the guitar you got at 15, but before that, what about in school? Did you do music in grade school or high, middle?
You know, not too much. In fourth grade, I had a teacher that, you know, I went to public school. Everybody in Chico went to public school because it's a smaller town. I had a fourth grade teacher that we would have music class once a week, and it was primarily just percussion instruments. But as far as like anything else, it wasn't really a part of the curriculum. He did that just because he wanted to.
But no choir, no marching band, shit like that?
Nothing like that, no.
Okay. What about the first record you bought with your own money for yourself?
Wow. That actually was probably the first, that's a tough one. I would say it would have
on the Watson Pedro show, there are no hard questions and there are no wrong answers.
Okay, good. I'm in the right place. I think that it was actually Eric B. and Rakim's Paid in Full.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Great album. I used to roll up. Nothing funny, nothing move but the money. You know, the one after that's really good, too. It's called Follow the Leader. And then it comes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had all the records. I still do, actually.
And what was the first gig that you saw?
The first gig that I saw was a date that my mom went on. And it was at the fairgrounds, and it was Survivor.
Oh, Eye of the Tiger. Which is like the Rocky soundtrack or something.
Right, that was like, you know, it didn't really leave a mark on me. I remember them playing Eye of the Tiger and thinking that was really cool because I loved the movie, but beyond that, I wasn't really that interested. I just wanted to, like, get ice cream, you know?
Right. Actually, he had... The first Rocky, he had another hit. It was more like horns and shit. I'm feeling strong now. But then, they made quite a franchise out of that. So, okay, your uncle gets your guitar. What about lessons?
I took some lessons at the beginning, and they were at the guitar shop where he purchased the guitar. And it was definitely by kind of like a Hesher... you know, metalhead guitar ripper. at the time I wasn't, you know, I really wanted to be in guitar. I really wanted to learn guitar, but I wasn't super interested in the way, you know, right away he like handed me a bunch of charts with like, this is the circle of fifths and, you know, all this stuff. And I wasn't really interested in that.
Yeah.
The one thing he told me that kind of sticks with me though is like, there was a huge poster of Jimi Hendrix behind him when he would teach. And so he told me the first thing he said, he was like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, Jimi Hendrix is 100. And then he said, the next guy is probably like 78. And I was just like, okay, wow, he's really good. You know, and of course at that time I obviously knew Hendrix at that point and loved him, but I thought that was interesting that he was such a metalhead, but like Hendrix was his guy.
That's great because Jimmy, especially for electric guitar, a lot of people borrow.
Yeah. People, so after that, I mean, I took maybe a few lessons with him and picked up enough that I felt like, you know, just like, you know, like basic kind of like pentatonic scales or blues scales. And then I stopped going. I stopped the classes and then just kind of learned on my own and, you know, pick up books and just listen to music and just learn that way.
Okay, I want to play some more of that.
마니까 아 내놓을게 심하이 마니까
you.
Thank you.
Pedro Show, we heard Vaz doing Elastic Sea. Then a few, Midnight Awakening and brand new stuff coming out. Lego Velt, this is a brand new. I think it was a dude went to a school in Switzerland and just started playing around with the music toys. After that, Wild Rats, Hollow, that's I got to record with Ron Ashton for a movie called Velvet Goldmine, the soundtrack with Thurston and Steve Shelley and Mark Armstrong, there. And Don Fleming was involved too. Macrotones with Blood Hands. After that, Tobacco. Mr. Tom's got a brand new record, Stabbed by Night, out of Pittsburgh. Damon Smith on solo stand up bass and Certain Foliage. That's a title. And then I'm going to Find You, which is Television with Dick Hell on bass, 1974. And finally, The Afi is brand new. Grand Canyon. What's it called? Joyful Noise, that label? Somewhere in the Midwest, maybe? What about the thing, Tyler, where you're after school in the bedroom or the garage or basement band?
What's that?
You know, where it's not organized. It's like you and your buddies after school in the basement or garage or bedroom mm-hmm. band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, you know, it was, I played in a band in high school that, you know, we played at the drummer's parents were kind enough to like let us use their guest room as like a practice space. And you know, we were really bad, of course.
This is your first band, right?
First band, yeah, in high school.
See, you gotta start somewhere though, right? It's like skateboard.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, at the time it was, you know, I was overjoyed to do it.
Did you write your own songs or did you guys try to copy songs off records or stuff?
We pretty much, I definitely wasn't the primary songwriter. I joined the band.
Okay.
They had been a band for a little bit. It was mostly originals. I don't think we really did any covers, but I'm sure we certainly blatantly ripped off a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like just taking a riff and changing one note or something like that to make it our own.
Yeah, like what Vanilla Ice did to that Queen song, Dave Bowie song.
Right, exactly. Yeah. just one, like, it's like that. I think with that song, it's not even like they didn't even change the note. It was just like an accent or something.
But you know what's funny? I don't know if you've ever seen like him give the explanation. No, they're completely different.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. they certainly are not completely
The thing
different.
We didn't get to see is him getting hung out the window by his ankles by Suge, right?
Right. I've you know, everybody knows that story or if you pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Scary. So did this band have a name?
Yeah, we were called the Funkin' Wagnalls after the, you know, the dictionary.
Oh, not the R&B band.
Okay. No.
look, did you guys only practice or did you do gigs?
We did a couple gigs.
What was the first one like?
The first one was terrifying because it was on the quad of our school. So, you know, we played like a school gig, and people were definitely pretty uninterested. Basically, everybody was just eating their lunch and we were playing. The second gig was like at a kind of a house party, but, you know, a very tame high school version of a house party, like before kids were like drinking or getting rowdy. It was like, you know, people eating, drinking juice and swimming in the pool.
I think in Pedro,
the band was short-lived. I got kicked out of the band.
Whoa, why?
And, honestly, at that time, the rest of the band, they were much better players than I was. And they had basically gotten me in the band. I was a little bit older than they were. So they basically asked me to be in the band so I could get them more gigs at, like, the cool parties. And And I didn't do that. So after a while, they realized, it's like, wow, this guy's not getting us the cool gigs at the parties, so what's the point? And that was that.
Did you ever get to record with him?
No, we definitely didn't record. I don't really know what happened to those guys. I mean, the guitar player was this kid, his name was Andy Potter, and he was not only a guitar genius, but just a genius in general. You know, he got like probably like a 4.5 GPA, like, and it was effortless, you know, and I think he picked up the guitar and like basically mastered it in 6 months.
Jesus.
You know, it was just a shredder. And, I definitely was not. So, I think that, you know, they went on as a band until they, and I don't think they really played any other gigs or did anything else other than, you know, play in that practice room, until they, you know, graduated and all went off to Ivy League schools.
Well, what about you after high school?
So after high school, for me, I went to college, briefly in Santa Barbara. I really didn't enjoy it at all. It wasn't necessarily the college part of it. That part I actually enjoyed, but just for me at that time, I don't think Santa Barbara was the right place for me. A lot of the music, you know, like, I mean, I don't know if you know much about that area, but like if you go to school in Santa Barbara and you're a graduate student or an undergrad rather, you live in this area called Isla Vista.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me coming from Chico, and at that point I'd started to, you know, I'd already started to get into like music that, you know, I would be into, like that I'm still into now. And at the time it was just I don't know, for me, like there was a big frat culture and this kind of like surf skate, you know, like Epitaph Records, Keg Stand, all this stuff. And it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, there was also a kind of new wave alternative thing, like Toad the Wet Sprocket and some kind of Joe.
Yeah, and it was just like that stuff was never my stuff. So it was just, I just couldn't really find a, you know, I think I found one kid that was into Unwound. And we like would jam around in a living room, just like bass and guitar, and that was really fun. But I just didn't really like the culture of where I was living. And so I ended up moving back to Chico. And that's kind of when, for me, things got really real. Some friends of mine had opened up a nonprofit theater in Chico, and they were doing shows as well, like to, you know, to supplement grants or whatever. In order to stay open, they would do, you know, DIY all ages shows. And so that's kind of when I got my first taste of like kind of, you know, seeing live bands all the time that were more off, you know, underground or for lack of a better word, or just, you know, different than what I'd really been exposed to.
Yeah.
And that kind of just changed everything for me. And then I stayed in Chico for a few years, and then I started booking shows.
We should say, because you mentioned Unwound, we lost the bass man.
Yeah, I know. Vern passed, and it was really, really, that was a really tough one for me, because
it's going to happen.
I certainly wouldn't play the way I played if it wasn't for Unwound, and not just like the guitar part. The bass, like I would, you know, play his bass lines on guitar and just try to figure him out.
They were somewhere northwest, right? Portland or Olympia?
I think they were from like a much smaller town originally, in Washington, but like the Olympia is, I think, where their kind of home base was.
Yeah, Wipers were Portland. I get mixed up. Look, we're at the end of the first hour.
Okay.
August 12, 2020 edition, Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest, Tyler Nolan. Hold tight for hour two. August 12, 2020, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Oh. One eye is brown. The other is brown. I am a fish. I swim around. You say I'm lost. I disagree. Has changed, and with it, me.
I hate to love me, we were friends, and I
това биш сила, без само доста дна, сверирска математика, аритметика, статистика, проценти, велики броеви, любав је доста дна, конфекција, а не уникатни кројеви, и нисмо део великог плана, све је само слободна волја. Наш сусрет није била никаква више сила, већ само обична и јефтина бепродукција. Глупи Холивуд, филмски промашај, буде потрошена два трупића, и главна глумица извън улоге, сваким делом свога бића. И нисмо део великог плана, све је само слободна волја.
Watt from Pedro Show. We start off the second hour with Vaz doing They've Won. Then we had Chrome. He's got Helios. He's got some health stuff right now. He's working through. Looking for Your Door with the other cat. Yeah, he's gone. Long time now. Devin Gavin Ross after that. That's Gary Panner. Came up with Jimbo, you know, the old Slash Zine comic. The Other Side, Nemi Pesnik from Slovenia with Matematica. Cal Portois. No, they're from Slovenia. These other guys. Anyway, former Yugo. Maybe that's safe to say because it can cover a lot of ground. 505. And finally, Swensy Klein out of Canada with a past in miniature. So tell me, you started putting on shows and stuff, but what's the connect with Vaz?
So I didn't meet the Vaz. I mean, I was. So Vaz, the two main guys in Vaz, Jeff and Paul, they were in a band in the 90s called Hammerhead that were on Amphetamine Reptile Records. And I was a fan of Hammerhead. I didn't actually meet them until I moved to New York later on. And, you know, at that point.
Oh, you mean like you're booking shows in Chico and then you decide to move to New York?
There were a few stops on the way. Okay, after I left Chico, I moved to Oakland for a bit. And then I moved to Los Angeles for a couple of years. And then I moved back to San Francisco to finish school. And then after that, I moved to New York. And then I lived in New York for 12 years.
And that's where you met these cats?
That's where I met them. And, you know, I just got put in, you know, they had primarily been a duo for most of their run. And I think they were just, you know, wanting to expand. And, you know, Jeff and Paul have been in bands together since they were in high school. And so, you know, they've been playing music together for, I mean, I guess it's almost 30 years at this point.
Whoa.
And so I think they were just looking for a new dynamic, and they'd had other guitar. They were based in Minneapolis for a long time, and then they lived in LA for a little bit. And then I think they went back to Minneapolis, and then they had another guitar player join the band, Adam Marks, and he was in the band for a bit. Then they moved to New York and had another guitar player, Ryan Hamilton, and then a friend of mine, Ryan, left the band, and then a friend of mine joined the band, but then he had like five bands going at the time and just didn't have time to do it, but he knew that they really wanted another guitar player, so he asked me. So I really didn't know those guys until I like walked in to practice with them for the first time.
And you're like the fifth guy.
Yeah, yeah. But we, you know, we hit it off and we had a good time, and then it was decided I would join the band, and then I, you know, played in the band for about 5 or 6 years.
And the Chartreuse Blues was the first thing you recorded with him?
That's right. The Chartreuse Blues was the first recording we did, and that was, you know, that was recorded by our friend Ben Greenberg in like a really dingy basement, just to tape, and it sounds real raw and kind of shitty. But it was the first recording, and then the next one was Visiting Hours.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't really into bass guitars, huh?
It's interesting because Paul, who's the other guitar player slash, I mean, I wouldn't say he's a bass player, but he was a bass player in Hammerhead, and so when Jeff and Paul decided to do Vaz, you know, it's like he had to figure out a way to cover more ground, being, you know, just one guy playing a stringed instrument. And I think it's more typical for it to be like a bass and drum duo. So he figured out a way, like he started Frankensteining his own guitars, all like Telecasters for the most part. And he strings them, you know, I guess somewhat like a baritone, but heavier on the low end and higher on the high end.
Oh, yeah. There's a guy in the city, Charlie Hunter. I think he has mm-hmm. bass strings on the top of his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you said there's not many bass drum duos, but there's one in the city, too, called Ohm, right?
Ohm, yeah. No, I was saying there's actually more. I would say it's more common for there to be a bass and drum duo than a guitar drum duo.
You got all muffled there.
Sorry. So yeah, there's like Oh and bands like, you know, Godhead Silence. There's a lot of, I feel like, bass and drums duo.
Ah, okay. Because when I think guitar drum, it kind of started with flat duo jets, then White Stripe and Slater Kinney.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Black Keys.
So, but I mean, there is low end. I mean, Paul basically has two bass strings on his guitar, and he's somehow in some weird way figured out how to like wire his guitars. So, you know, one pickup just picks up the bass strings and one pickup just picks up the guitar strings and he splits them. So, you know, two of the strings are bass strings going through an SVT and then the other four guitar strings.
Yeah, because I do hear some kind of low end. I do hear some kind of low end. That's how he did that. Here, yeah. I want to play some more bass.
Okay.
it has come to me that my dignity and my darkest insecurities have met like two birds faced off on some power line, pierced, tired, and unwilling to turn back. And nothing hurts like the quiet, and there's no healing like moonlight. I am accustomed to this battle every night. And long ago, my mother taught me about the crucial act of simply showing up. And though I'll fail, I'll try my best to replicate a unrelenting love. And the time it throttles forward and human folly pushes back like a boxer full of nothing left to lose. And the battlefield's never ending until the judges call the fight. I am accustomed to this battle every night. I am accustomed to this battle every night.
Touch.
Oh, baby.
świetne z człowieku dwa cel. Chcę swemu hnusem zwracę. Ale wiem, co jedź ty wiece. Jednoho wyplid jeszcze wiece. Jem ten, komu je 60. Může jít se sklerózou klidně spát.
Show, yeah, that was Vaz doing the rheumatist. She's like, yes, the guy who has rheumatism. Fuck, I don't wish that on anybody. Fuck that.
Me neither.
Yeah. And then Will Johnson, brand new, with a bloody boxer. Peter Lochner from the old Cleveland scene with Rain on the City. Wart and Tears out of New York recorded a lot of old Sonic Youth and Glenn Branca. It's a, the girls. What that girl Glenn Branca had? Something girls? I can't remember. But it's the Wharton Tears Ensemble with Terminal Dumpster Juice. And then finally, Plastic People Universe, Vasset. And that they were a Czech band in the 60s. Theoretical Girls. That's what those guys were called. Okay. So, because I thought that was... Yeah, maybe he was overdubbing a bass, but he's actually got some heavy strings going at the same times as he's working that thing. Now, in that band, what they do, they play you the tunes and ask you to come up with something, or did they write you your parts?
No, they would just play the tunes. And then, you know, when I first joined the band, obviously I was just playing songs that were already written, but I would come up with my own parts. And then when we started writing for the records, it was completely... collaborative. You know, usually Paul would come in with like a riff, and then I would just find, you know, my place in that riff, and then we would just build from there.
Now, you probably toured with him, right?
Yeah, did a bunch of touring with him.
And what was that like? What for you? What kind of experience was that? Because you earlier you were booking gigs. What's it like to be part of the other end of that?
You know, for me,
I asked you that, Tyler, because I wish more dudes who book gigs come from being in the van doing the gigs so they could relate to the experience, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I definitely, there was some of that. I mean, for me, honestly, it was just, I was just so overjoyed to do it. You know, I loved touring. It was never, obviously, you know, like a lot of people that tour know, like, some people like it, some people don't.
Yep.
And even people that like it, you know, there's a point where maybe it's dragging a bit and you just want to go home. And for me, I just never really felt that. I was just super excited to be out on the road and playing shows. When it comes to, like, being...
You know, I tell you, Tyler, the Minutemen shared that. Man, me and D. Boone, we really loved it, man. We thought, wow, vacations? People pay money for this shit?
Yeah, no, that's kind of how I felt. It was like, you know, like, to me, it's like, that's all I wanted to do. And, you know, I think with Jeff and Paul, they really loved it too, but they had also been doing it for much longer than I had. So maybe there was times where they would get a little bit like, but for the most part, they were also very happy to be on the road as well.
I wanted to ask
just like the young kid, like, yeah, let's do it, you know.
Well, it's better than the older kid that's supposed to be getting you good gigs at the parties.
Yeah. I think the funny thing, though, is with, like, the booking thing is it kind of worked almost in the other way. I mean, most of the booking I had done at that time was, like, you know, independent, all-ages, DIY-type shows. So, like, you know, the bands were getting basically, you know, they're getting the whole door after, because it was just, like, a non-profit space.
Yeah.
So we would give the bands all the money after, like, $60 for the PA and the, you know, the person doing sound for $30.
Yeah.
So we didn't take any of the door. We would just take money from selling beers out of the cooler. But so for me, it was like you would think that maybe on the road I would be more of like a hard ass towards the promoters, but it was the opposite. It was kind of like, you know, maybe Paul or Jeff being like, fuck these guys, and me having to be like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is what they're going through.
I wish people knew that, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes they treat the promoters like the enemy. Promoters got to be running the scene. They got to keep that scene going the other 364 days of that year.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
See, you know, yeah, I can totally relate to what you're talking about.
And the way, I think it's really easy for bands, yeah, and a lot of it is, you know, merited, I think, because there are a lot of venues.
Of course, and there's assholes, everybody. Tyler, if he's really an asshole, you work for him once.
Exactly. You know, my attitude has always been, whether it's booking shows or being on the road, is it's like, you know, when you go into a venue, the idea is, we're all in this together, right? Like we're
absolutely.
You know, you guys are providing an environment and a vibe, and we're providing, you know, music, and we should all be looking out for each other and doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
And you know, hoping that at the end of the night we can know each other's names and maybe keep in touch and come back. It doesn't always work that way.
No, you know, but man, I like that philosophy, Tyler. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. August 12, 2020, edition WAP Peter Show special guest, Tyler Nolan. Hold tight for hour three. August 12, 2020, it's the third hour of the WAP for Peter Show.
And it's about time. And it's about time for me.
Pedro Show, start off the third hour with Vaz doing arm bone. I love that title. Then we had Crane, because of you. Mason Space, the band he had with Dirk, Charlie F., before that, John Rockowski, Vacation, the Tragic Comedy, Jam Number 5, Kaleidoscope, featuring late great Richard Derrick, another Umbrella, Sproton Layer. I think that's Roger Miller when he was younger. When he lived in Ann Arbor, maybe. And then finally, Mutator from Vaz. So what ends up happening with Vaz?
So basically, you know, we were active. I mean, Vaz, we basically all moved away from New York. I moved to Los Angeles after 12 years of being in New York and doing that and loving every second of it. But it just felt like it was time for a move. And I had been working at a venue called Zebulon. And we closed just due to basic like gentrification and noise complaints. So one of my partners moved out to Los Angeles and then ended up finding a space and kind of called me and just asked if I wanted to be involved. And I did. So I think at that time, like, you know, New York was growing a little old for me and Jeff and Paul as well. And I ended up moving to Los Angeles to start the Zebulon Los Angeles, and so, Jeff and Paul moved back to Minneapolis.
And you're telling me, so did Vaz fall apart, or they still got it going?
No, you know, I think they still keep it going a little bit. They're certainly not as active as they used to be, but, you know, they still will play the odd show. We ended up playing a show at Zebulon Los Angeles. They came out and flew out, and we just, you know, kind of had a gig. We never really called it. It was never like, oh, this isn't working and the band's over. I mean, that would really be up to them because it's their thing. But it was just more of like, okay, let's, you know, we just went our separate ways and we still are in touch. And, you know, those guys, I love those guys and we talk. And I think there's still maybe even plans to, you know, do some recording down the line.
Now, you're talking about Zebulon in New mm-hmm. York City and then Zebulon here in SoCal.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking venues. Now, I got to tell mm-hmm. the listeners, I got to connect with you through Derek Gaines, and it's about this situation with the COVID-19 in our venue situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to say something about that?
Well, you know, it's obviously this situation, this pandemic is awful for everybody in a variety of ways. You know, I can't, you know, people are getting evicted, people are unemployed, you know, there's a lot of people suffering. People aren't able to, you know, go to class and get a free meal. And, you know, there's so many layers to it. I can really only directly speak to the venue side of it, from a personal standpoint, because that's what I'm involved in. And yeah, you know, we've been closed. I think our last show was March 15th and, we've been closed ever since. And, you know, I think a lot of venues, especially venues that are independent and of a smaller or medium size, you know, it's hard to operate in the black in general. So when something like this happens, you know, it's devastating for us. And, you know, we haven't locked the doors yet. We're still hopeful. But, you know, we're still paying rent, we're still paying sales tax, we're still paying insurance, and we have no revenue coming in whatsoever. And I think, you know, there's now, you know, there's the National Independent Venue Association that's working with certain senators that are trying to pass legislation, one of which is the Save Our Stages Act, which would basically be, you know, grants to venues to operate for the next 6 months, or to rather be able to pay overhead for the next 6 months, because no one's going to be operating probably before then. And then there's the Restart Act, which is like more of kind of like just general like loan tax forgiveness, tax credits and stuff like this, and extra benefits for employees that are, you know, laid off. And I think the bigger picture for us is like, you know, as we were talking, I don't know if we were on air or off air, but when we were talking about, you know, kind of like we're all in it together, I think it's the same thing when it comes to venues. It's like right now it's looking like there's a healthy percentage, I mean, of venues that are not going to make it through this. And so, you know, that if every venue that closes, it affects the venue next door. It affects the touring structure. It affects, you know, if half, I mean, right now they're saying that up to 90% of venues might not make it through this. If, even if half the venues don't make it through this, I mean, what does that look like for the touring network that's been, you know, set up over, you know, it's like a band coming from Australia that has to buy a $1,500 ticket to do a tour. They need to play, you know, 20 to 30 days at least to make it worth it. And now maybe they're only going to be able to play, you know, like 10 or 15 shows with really long drives. You know, the drives are really long already. So,
yeah,
you know,
I don't know if you've ever toured in Australia, but
I have. Yes. Yeah.
There's five big towns. I want to play last bit of music for this edition.
Sky.
scissors.
Thank you.
Bob from Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Yeah, that's Vaz doing White World of Death. And then we had Ned Collette from Australia. No. Yeah, because sometimes I mix them up with New Zealand, and I don't mean any disrespect. Ned Collette with the Wirewalker doing Bird. And then the chef cooks me from Tokyo within the town. Or to wait, I couldn't get the right translation because it was all in hiragana and there was no kanjis. And then Srnjag Zuba, Black Tooth in Serbian. This is Brother Koya, an incredible bass man. But he played guitar for this movie soundtrack. And this is the fourth part from Funk y Lastis. And finally, Bombas Prendent with French Passport. These DC guys in the early 80s just making experimental music. People... I'm really into what Tyler's talking about this stuff with the venue and the COVID-19, and somehow we got to make through. Is there a website for this group you were talking about? What are they called?
It's called NIVA. So it's NIVA, National Independent Venue Association. And, there is a website. I believe it's just NIVA.com. But you can just Google it, and you'll find it.
Well, not just that, but what can people do? They can talk to their Congress people.
Yeah, I mean, anything, you know, the main bill, the Save Our Stages, is supported by, you know, Amy Klobuchar, who's a Democratic senator out of Minneapolis, and then John Cornyn, who's a Republican senator out of Texas. And they introduced the bill. You can just, you can go, if you go to the NIVA website, there's going to be a lot of information on being, like, just how to support small venues, how to support independent venues of any size. So that would be a good starting point if anybody is interested in doing that.
Because, you know, if you go back, man, there was this kind of jive shit where you had to play covers. There wasn't venues that supported
right.
original music.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not talking about that kind of lame jive thing. We're talking about a thing where encourage people to let the freak flag fly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think even beyond that, you know, it's like, you know, obviously being able to, you know, in a time like this, it's important to have perspective with, you know, like, it's, you know, it's a privilege to be able to go and participate and do this at venues with everything going on. But there's also a bigger picture, you know, it's like venues are in a lot of ways, if, you know, if I were to debate somebody with about it, you know, they're also economic generators. They also are just like a place for people to meet and exchange ideas.
Yeah,
and
develop, I was going to say.
Develop culture.
I was going to say culture propagators.
Yes, exactly. And you know, they're cures for, you know, they're important for mental health. Like, I mean, for so many things.
Yeah. So, man, it's a big honor to have you on the show.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Mike. Thank you very much.
It means a lot. And everybody, Tyler put out there, you know, we're not trying to propaganda or brainwash anybody, but just putting it out there. You hear all this wild music, 19 years on the Watt for Pedro. These are from bands. Some dudes, yeah, everybody's got some time in the bedroom, but a lot of dudes go out there and work the towns.
Yeah, definitely. Right.
Thanks again for being on the show. Big love.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Okay, people, it's been the August 12th, 2020. This is Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.